You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And due respect to the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers.
Make this land a better land in the world in which we live.
And help each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can. Why can't we? If we want it, yes, we can, can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that we can.
I know we can make it if we try.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can, can. Yes, we can. Great gosh almighty. Yes, we can. I know we
this
can,
call.
Can.
For African peoples, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour a libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour a libation, our shades. Pour a libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us, so we wouldn't. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization, and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve. And at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach, and you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, for they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation, ashe, ashe, ashe.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Are you or is anyone you know suffering from the horrific effects of trauma? If so, the Little Book of Affirmations, Claim Your Narrative Over Trauma, can help you. This short ebook is a self-help tool to help you get started on the path of healing from the impacts of trauma. It is important to know that trauma is not an event. It is how your body responds to an event. School shootings, police shootings, the death of a loved one, car accident, all of these events can cause trauma in our bodies. But you can heal from it. I repeat, you can heal from it. So go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble to purchase your ebook today and just in time for the holidays, which is a time when a lot of people are suffering. Give the gift of healing for yourself or for someone you care about. The book was written by a licensed professional counselor who specializes in trauma-informed care. Follow her on Instagram at PLT_LPC and LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor. And I repeat, Instagram at PLT_LPC and LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor.
Hello.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414-988.
From saying walk in the blues. Walk in the blues, cause this is it, boy. Now I think I'm gonna relax myself. That's the way you relax. And watch this. Boy, it's a hot day today.
Yeah.
All you got to do is put one foot in front of the other one and just keep on walking. Walking them blues.
Oh, what?
That's what you call sliding, too.
Thank you.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my sisters and brothers. Welcome again to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers. We are here, as you know, every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on the timeforanawakening.com radio platform. So we thank you so much, as always, for joining us tonight. We are going to do a end of the year wrap up. As you know, we got 17 more days left in 2021, and we just want to kind of take a look in the rearview mirror and see where we've come and what has happened and what we've learned and what we didn't learn and what we got to learn and some of those kinds of things. Just a free for all conversation with some of my brothers and sisters that are clearly online with us now. I appreciate all of you for your support here at the Black Reality Think Tank. One other feature that we wanted to begin to add, I had a conversation a couple of days ago with one of our other producers who does a program on Thursday, and he was talking about the power of black music and our heritage of music and how we depend upon it. We'd be surprised how we depend upon music. I know I do. And there are times that there's nothing can soothe us like some good old music. And so we want to begin to pay more tribute to that type of thing. And so here at the Black Reality Think Tank, we're going to add another feature. And we are going to feature or highlight a specific genre of music that comes out of the black experience. And so tonight we are paying special tribute to that good old music out of New Orleans. And I mean, it has a varied format. It has a varied format from jazz, to hip hop, to R&B, you know, all kind of different things. And I think there's no one that knows anything about New Orleans that know that it's not music. It is a music city. So we're going to pay tribute to some of those and some of those great legends. And when I say pay tribute, we just simply mean that during those times when we play music in between our discussions, we'll just fill that in with some of that good old New Orleans jazz, like we did tonight. We opened up with a song by Alan Toussaint, and it was a piece that actually was made popular by the Pointer Sisters called "Yes We Can." And but it's very appropriate for here what we are talking about, because we're saying, yes, we can. We can do it. We can hang in there. We got to hang in there. And we can do it, and we can make it. We can build our community. And we can, as Dr. Bruce Bridges says in his book, we can awaken the African mind again. And so I believe that. And it's just got to keep on trying. And so that song was Alvin Toussaint's piece called "Yes, We Can." And so we're going to feature other artists throughout our program tonight. To just to sort of highlight that city, I used to go to New Orleans every summer without fail. Just couldn't make it through the rest of the winter without going to New Orleans first, and got all my kids involved in it, the grandkids who used to go. And it was just a beautiful thing. I had the opportunity to go to Mardi Gras a couple of times. So it was a great experience, and I love New Orleans. So sorry what happened in 2005 with Katrina. As well as some of the other things that have happened lately. But New Orleans didn't stop. They kept on pushing. And I think that's what we have to do here as African peoples. So tonight I'm going to do an ancestral profile, and I am going to go to New Orleans to do it, and I will be profiling the brother that we opened with, Alan Toussaint. One of the individuals, when he passed on to the ancestors, said that in concert, in the studio or around his beloved New Orleans, Mr. Toussaint was a soft-spoken embodiment of the city's musical tradition. He revered as one of the master craftsmen of 20th century American pop. In the pantheon of New Orleans music, people from folks like Jelly Roll Morton, King Oliver, Mahalia Jackson, Fats Domino, is the place where Alan Toussaint is in and where he started his musical career. He is the longtime producer of the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, where Mr. Toussaint himself played almost every year since the mid-1970s. Mr. Toussaint's career began when he was a teenager in the 50s, and his jaunty piano playing caught the ear of people like Fats Domino. It continued to the present with a late blooming love for performing live and collaborating with rock and pop musicians like Elvis Costello. Mr. Toussaint had his greatest impact in the 60s and 70s when, as both a songwriter and producer, he worked on records like Ernie Cado's Mother-in-Law, Lee Dorsey's Working in the Coal Mine, and Jesse Hill's Ooh Papa Doo. He described everyday pleasures and nuances with empathy, wit, and loose, funky swing. The song that we also played a few minutes ago, right as we began, right as I came on, was won by a musician by the name of Jack Dupree, and it was called Strolling. And what he does is he takes that piano and he just strolls it along. And that is the same style that Alvin Toussaint used in his career. During the 70s, Mr. Toussaint's studio, which was called Sea Saint, which he founded with the producer Marshall Seahorn, became renowned for recordings by the Meters, people like Dr. John, Patti LaBelle, and others had attracted this international style of music. People like Paul McCartney, Robert Palmer, all had begun to grasp the style that Mr. Toussaint had created. And even though he was kind of a behind-the-scenes brother, he still found his way to be number one on the pop charts in 7. When Glen Campbell recorded a song that he had written called Southern Nights. Mr. Toussaint's inspiration, he often said, was New Orleans itself. And over the years, he became an unofficial musical ambassador for the city, where for decades he maintained a modest home in a middle-class neighborhood in New Orleans. At the Jazz Festival, as the Jazz and Heritage Festival is known, he's usually performed in a bright and elaborately decorated coat. Even off stage, Mr. Toussaint had an eccentric dandy style. He drove a Rolls Royce with the license plates Piana, and he favored pinstripe suits and purple silk shirts paired with the Birkenstock sandals. "It's who we are," Mr. Toussaint said of New Orleans in an interview a few years ago. He published by the Red Bull Music Academy. He said, "The food we eat, the history, Mardi Gras Indians who rehearse all year long, the second line brass bands who strut that strut, the syncopation, the humor, and the slightly slower pace than the rest of America, the way we mosey along rather than running the race, like the song I said before, we just strolling, just strolling." So on Tuesday, Paul Simon, with whom Mr. Toussaint was scheduled to give a benefit concert before his death in New Orleans, recalled their long history together, which goes back to recording sessions in the early 70s when Mr. Toussaint played piano for him and wrote chord charts for his musicians. I had a chance to hear Alvin Toussaint play once when I was in New Orleans at a club called the Spotted Cat in New Orleans. He said, "We were friends and colleagues for almost 40 years. Mr. Simon wrote in an email, we played together at the New Orleans Jazz Festival. We played the benefits for Katrina relief. We were about to perform again. I was just beginning to think about it. Now I'll have to think about his memorial." He said, "I'm so sad." Alan Toussaint was born on January the 14th, 1938, in Gertown, which is a working-class neighborhood of New Orleans, to Clarence Toussaint, a railroad worker, and the former Naomi Neville, whose name he occasionally used as songwriting pseudonyms. By his early teens, he was playing piano with the guitarist Snooks Eaglin, and he got his first break when he substituted for the New Orleans band leader and pianist Huey Piano Smith on tour in 1957. The next year, Mr. Toussaint recorded The Wild Sound of New Orleans, an album of instrumentals released by RCA Victor under the name Tucson. It was no hit, but it later gave him a taste of success as a songwriter. One song in the album was called Java, for which Mr. Toussaint shared a credit with Alvin Tyler and Freddie Friday, and it was covered by the trumpeter Al Hurt in 1963, and it reached number 4 on the Billboard chart. In 1960, Mr. Toussaint became the house producer, arranger, and songwriter for the Bennett label, which he worked with Irma Thomas, Aaron Neville, Benny Spellman, and others. After serving in the Army from 1963 to 1965, he returned to music, establishing Sansu Enterprises, which was a publishing company, and a group of record labels with Mr. Seahorn. The sound that Mr. Toussaint developed in the 60s built on the rollicking piano style of the early New Orleans figures like Professor Longhair, with arrangements that melded deep R&B grooves with touches of pop. Allen was the crucible of New Orleans music, said his producer, Leo Sachs, who in 1990 recorded a gospel singer, Raymond Miles, who was later signed to Mr. Toussaint's NYNO label. Allen's call and response choruses were catchy and clever. His harmonics were rich and gospel flavored, and no one had his handiness with the hook. Many of Mr. Toussaint's songs would eventually be Fortune Teller, which became a standard among the British invasion rock bands in the 1960s. It was recorded by The Who and the Rolling Stones, among others. He said, "I was so glad when the Rolling Stones recorded my song," Mr. Toussaint once told an interviewer. "I knew that they would know how to roll it all the way to the bank." During the 70s, Mr. Toussaint recorded 3 albums for labels under the Warner Brothers umbrella. But the popularity of his style of R&B waned, and the rise of disco had begun to come in. He continued to write, however, though, and record for independent labels. And in 1998, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. After Hurricane Katrina, Mr. Toussaint's career took another turn when he relocated to New York. He began to make regular appearances at Joe's Pub, the intimate East Village nightclub, and recorded The River in Reverse, which is a collaboration with Elvis Costello that was a response to the hurricane and the destruction of New Orleans. He was toured with Mr. Costello, an experience that inspired him to play concerts much wider than he ever had before, according to Mr. Davis of the Jazz Festival. Brother LaRue, could you mute your phone, please? Thank you, sir. He recorded The River in Reverse, and it was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Pop Vocal Album, but it didn't win. Mr. Toussaint's only Grammy was a Trustees Award, which was a private prize in 2009. In 2013, he was awarded the National Medal of Arts in a ceremony at the White House. In addition to his daughter, Allison, Mr. Toussaint's survivors include a daughter, Naomi Rios, a son, Clarence Reginald, a brother, Benson, and his 6 grandchildren. Mr. Toussaint eventually returned to New Orleans, where he preferred to keep a low profile. He said, "I'm not accustomed to talking about myself," he once said, according to his website. "I talk in the studio with musicians or either through my music." Alvin Toussaint, the versatile producer, songwriter, pianist, and singer, who was a fixture of New Orleans R&B, died after appearing in concert in Madrid, Spain on Monday night, 2015. Allison Toussaint LeBeau, his daughter, confirmed his death. Javier Ayuso, which was a spokesman for a Madrid emergency service, told the Associated Press that the rescue workers had been called to Mr. Toussaint's hotel early that morning and were able to revive him after a heart attack. But Mr. Toussaint later stopped breathing en route to the hospital. Alvin Toussaint, powerful brother. So, Brothers and sisters, I wanted to, this is our tribute, ancestral tribute profile, New Orleans musician. And I want to do this each week of our program. Our music, as I said earlier, our music is very important to us. And it is the spirit and heart of our flow. I remember when the great W.B. Du Bois wrote The Souls of Black Folk. And he said that the sweetest music he ever heard on this side of heaven was the gospels. And I think that flows for all of our music. Even the blues, down-home blues, and this New Orleans jazz, and the R&B, and even on up to the current style and genre of music today, still has an effect on what we do. So each week from now on, we're going to begin to do that, and I hope you will appreciate it and enjoy some of our choices that we're going to make. So tonight, we're going to talk about in the rearview mirror of Black America. What do we see in 2021? Had a lot of stuff going on. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on all the time. But this has been somehow the impact has been tremendous.
2021, come on. What the fuck are you talking about?
Ladies and gentlemen, please remember, if you're talking, that your phone can easily pick up and broadcast right into the air. So if you could just mute your phone until we call you, we're glad to appreciate that. I don't want to have to, you know, keep interrupting you, but we do have to do that. This is an open phone line. All of you are on a switchboard line that all of the phones are open until I mute them. So if you're talking or anything playing in the background, it will pick up over the air. And so I would appreciate it if you would mute them. I mean, I can mute it too, but I'd rather you do it. And then that way you have a chance to, when you get ready to say something, you do so. So anyway, I'm so appreciative of the panel that we do have online right now. We have a very good, powerful group of brothers and sisters I know that would like to input into what we are going to talk about. So we want to review some of those things, all the way from this COVID thing and what's happening with that. And a lot of it we've covered in the program here, but I think maybe as we look at it as a reflection of what has taken place, it's a different story. A lot of us have probably lost family and friends to COVID. The high numbers of homicides and killings that are going on throughout this country and every state in this country. I don't think anybody is immune from it. The unemployment situation, the fight over a president that was a completely madman, and the kind of confusion and frustration that he gave people in terms of their lives and living under a government system. All of that we countered. All of that we've had to look at. And like everything, you learn from that. You couldn't avoid it. You had to deal with it, but then you also learn. And so the question becomes, what do you learn? And based on what you learn, what do you do with it? How do you make differences, changes? You know, we're individuals. We have to have support of others, which is why we do this program, to bring the people together to talk about what can we do? What suggestions can we make? How can we begin to help people focus and write agendas that will make change? How do we do that? You know, what do we see? What are the realities of some of all this? That's why we call it the Black Reality Think Tank. What is the reality of this? And here we still need to talk about it anyway and look at how our community sees that. And what are we telling our children? That's the biggest issue. You know, we got kids behind us that are depending on us to pave the way. I mean, you may not have any personally, but there are some that are there that you don't know who's following you sometimes. You don't know who's looking at you for leadership and advice, who sees you as a father figure, a mother figure. You don't know that sometimes. And so it's we say things and do things, but we have to be mindful, very mindful of the fact that there are younger people, there are folks that are watching what we do, and they are preparing themselves based on what they see. There's an old saying that our organization that I belong to used to use as their motto. They will be what they see. And that's true. That's just like us. When we were children, We had adults that we followed and looked at. I don't think they had a clue to know that how I was looking at them and how I wanted to be like that. You know, I never told them that personally, but I knew that. One of the pivotal people in my life when I was coming up was my scoutmaster. I wanted to be like him. I didn't tell him that. He never knew it. He was a strong guy. He was very forceful. I used to like the way he handled us, and I used to watch him. He knew, I mean, when he would do, we would do scouting things, and, you know, I was impressed with the brother. I always said, I want to be strong like that. So that's what we're doing tonight. We're going to rearview mirror ourselves and take a look. So we're going to get right into it. And so I'm going to go to my dear brother, and I want all of you, this is a conversation. This is no lectures, no nothing. This is where we want to hear from you, ideas, talks, suggestions, just your viewpoint, you know. So let me start off. Call on my brother. I love him to death. Appreciate him so much, Brother Herbie White out of Durham, North Carolina. I really appreciate his comments and the way he thinks. So, Brother Herbie, I'm going to let you break the ice for us tonight. What did you learn from 2021, Brother White?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers.
Good evening, my brother. How you doing?
And Hotep to everyone on the show. Well, I didn't learn anything really new in 2021 because I already knew that white people despise black people because they're afraid of black people, especially black men. And that fuels their behavior. One of the things that they fear the most is genetic annihilation, something that they can't do anything about because that's part of nature. If you look at the way animals live,
right.
The females always wait to mate with the fittest and the most dominant males. So if you look at world society, who are the most fittest and dominant males? Black men.
I like that.
That's why when they lynched us, the first thing that they did was to desecrate our reproductive organs.
Right.
I just wanted to mention something, a terrible event took place in Durham a couple of nights ago where there was a shooting over near MacDougal Terrace, and they shot into a car of young people, six young people, shot all six of them, killed two of them. The other four is in the hospital, two of them on critical. You know, if you were shooting into the car and shot all six, that means you wanted to kill all six of them.
Right.
Where did that come from?
This was the policeman did this?
No, this was just somebody in some other blacks in the community.
Oh, okay.
Shot into a car, six young people, four of them under 18. You know, I saw a program where one person said, no young person says, I want to grow up to be a murderer and spend the rest of my life in jail. No one does that. So if you took a group of young black men, say fourth grade is 10 years old, and asked them what they wanted to be, and they told you all the things that they wanted to be when they grow up, how do they get from there to this?
Right.
What happens to them between the time that they're 10 years old and have all kind of aspirations to be something, whatever it is, to the point where they want to kill people that look like them for nothing.
Yeah. And that's a point we've got to deal with as a community. That really is. That's got to deal with that.
What takes place in front of your face from the time that they are innocent children to become something that despises themselves so much that they don't feel like that there's nothing that they care about anymore.
And that's something we really have to address. We've tried to address some of that, kind of look at a cause and effect analysis of that, and that's difficult because it gets into all different realms of things that some of us may not be trained to consider, but we know that it's happening. I just read today, and I didn't know this, that the football player kid went in that house in Rock Hill, South Carolina, and killed his doctor, his wife, a mechanic who was in there working, the children, and the grandchildren. Shot them all. And I think he killed them. Now, you remember that? Do you remember that, Brother Wade?
Yes, black. I do. Yeah. I saw about it today.
Yeah, right. I saw it today, too. And now they're saying that he had some kind of a brain trauma.
That's that CTE that football players have from the concussion.
Concussion, right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so when I look at that and I say, you know, okay, well, how do we deal with that? You know, I mean, that's obviously, it's not like, you know, he was just a bad person. I mean, you know, he committed something that's horrendous. The guy here in Waukesha, they said the same thing. He had some kind of mental issue. And then I wonder sometimes, are those excuses when you can't find the answer to why people do things? Or one that's workable, one that where people can live with it. But you're right, Brother White. How do we get, who would pull up and shoot a car full of kids? Even if they had done something or cut them off in traffic or called them some names out the window. Who would do that? What is the MO?
I saw they showed a picture of the crime scene and they had those little cones on the ground and looked like maybe about 100 shots was fired.
God. And that's what we're seeing now. We're being escalated to that level of violence. I was a friend on Facebook I saw today. I knew her very well, and her son was just killed a couple of days ago in a drive-by shooting. Nobody can figure it out. He wasn't a bad guy. He wasn't selling drugs. He wasn't like he was a drug dealer, any of those kind of things. He just had come home from school, went to the store, came home, got shot about 5 or 6 times.
When I was a young person, teenager, early teens, 18, I didn't want to kill anybody.
No, that's not thought of. I mean, no way we could walk among each other. And, I mean, you know, you have little fights, you know. I remember in our day in Durham, the thing was the switchblade knife. You remember that, Brother White?
Oh yeah.
Go to the pawn shop and get a switchblade knife, and if you got caught with it by anybody, not only just the police or teacher or your neighbor, anybody, you was a dead duck. And that just wasn't heard of. But now it's totally different. So anyway, Brother White, I appreciate that assessment of what you've learned from 2010. I've learned, and I think basically we can say, I don't want to put words in your mouth, that the gravity of our existence is very high right now, correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, like I'm saying, if you ask your grandparents, what did they learn, you know,
right,
in the 1930s and the 1920s? They would tell you stories as bad as the stories we're telling right now.
That's right. Because in New York, even in New York, I don't remember crime. I mean, that was, and New York had a lot of crime, but it wasn't like this. Now, you might get robbed. Somebody burglarized your house. That would happen.
But that was usually trying to feed drug habits. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, they had the street gangs, but nobody had guns and buried. Somebody got killed. When somebody did get killed, it was like, you know, mm-hmm. a horrific event. You know, everybody was traumatized.
Right. I remember they had the thing out about Fort Greene projects. They had that gang in Fort Greene called the Jolly Stompers.
Well, the Stompers was in another area. They had Chapman's down there. Down in Fort Greene.
Okay, right. Yeah, but I remember Fort Greene was worse. It was rough.
Yeah.
And now houses in Fort Greene are $1 million for two.
Yeah.
More than that.
I'm surprised they haven't gone down yet.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Thank you so much, Brother Wyatt. I appreciate it. Let me. I believe this is Dr. Bridges. Is that you over there? How you doing, my brother? No, that's not him. I thought it was him. Okay. Brother Kwasi, you were a police officer. You got to see a lot of things happen. What did you learn from 2021?
Oh, my goodness. I tell you, just so much. You know, one of the things I did when I was on law enforcement, I used to teach classes, conflict resolution skills, and I used to stay up with the stats as far from country to country and, you know, state to state, that kind of thing. And when you look at Milwaukee, you know, we're at 700 plus in homicides for this year. Mm-hmm. And so if we go back last year, this time we're around, you know, we're about 500.
Right.
You know, and low 500. You go back to 2019, we're at 325.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a few years where we had 400, but, you know, this big jump and spike, I mean, it's the same thing with domestic violence. You had domestic violence incidents went up, I think, 31%. And, they blame a lot of it on the COVID with people being home like that. But, you know, you had in 2019, you had maybe 30 incidents that resulted in death. And this year, well, I'll say last year, the stats were 2020, you got about 52.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so you got all that going on. Then you look at, you know, all the stuff that we've been dealing with in regards to, you know, these political issues and stuff, you know, voting rights. I mean, right. They're just hitting us in all kind of different areas and stuff.
Right.
You know, where we're just losing out in so many different areas. I made contact with some people because one of the things I'm trying to do is start a code of conduct for our black youth. And I mean youth and adults.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I think that we should get together and work on these things. And we don't need to get together where, you know, we get funded for some money. I mean, we can do this and want to do this for ourselves and stuff, you know. So.
Right. And you're right, because these are our children. These are our children.
Now, yeah, exactly.
Now, here's the question I would have. Here's the question I would have to an idea like that. Who's going to enforce it, and how are you going to enforce it?
That's why I'm putting that information out there. I made contact with a lot of psychologists that, and a lot of these other community activist people that do things for in the city with specific groups. And I just want to see if they want to try to stretch out and do some of that stuff outside of maybe the money that they get and create something that, you know, we can empower our own people, you know, the way we need to. Because when they do things and it's guided under the city's program or however they want to call it, you know, it's not in their best interest to create something where we kind of resurrect ourselves, and we certainly don't want to do it where we show that the black people can, you know, do that for our people and stuff like that. They want to keep us divided. So
mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I'm just hoping that some people say, hey man, let's get together, let's do this. And you know, this is just what we do. We've done this before, but we didn't have help from people. Just like when the Black Panther started the food lunch program and the vaccination program and stuff. And then the government took all that stuff over because they wanted to say, hey, we can't do this for our people, but we were doing it. We were protecting them, escorting them to schools. I mean, we had all these different organizations, you know, Deacons for Defense, and they were helping people all over the country.
Okay.
So we just got to get back into, you know, just doing what comes natural, protecting our family, and that's it. You know, because I can't see going out here in the streets, being angry, and holding on to this anger and then taking it out on innocent people. I mean, we got to learn how to, you know, put that stuff aside, you know, not go to bed angry and all this other kind of stuff. But, you know, we got so many issues in regards to how we kind of glorify that, you know, whether it be in our music sometimes, a lot of different things, you know, right. But we got to look to change.
And I think you're clearly, you're right. But again, some of the folk who would be responsible for enforcing those kinds of things are like parents, and they are suffering under certain kinds of stressful situations of economics and trying to feed families and overburdened with children. Fathers going one way, mothers going the other way. They trying to take the care of their grandkids and their kids. You know, so you got those kinds of issues that don't make it easy to implement a plan where people would take an active part in it like that. Now we've got this attitude now, a very apathetic one, where people, you know, which may be a part of the reason why it's some of the things are getting the way it is. I'm going to go over to Brother Lush. Brother Lush, you know, you're an academician. You've seen younger folk that are coming who are professionals that are getting ready to try to professionalize their lives. You know, one of the things we hear a lot about out here, and I, as a historian, what I do is I look back in history to see were there other periods or times very similar to what we're going for now, and so if so, what were we doing? What did we do? How did we handle that? You know, I believe in that Malcolm X quote. He said you have to go back and you have to look, you know, at our ancestors. You have to look. You know, history is that thing that tells us how to go forward now, and look at how things operate. So I'm wondering. I remember, you know, in the days of the Wild West, at that time when they could kill you if you stole somebody's horse. You know, you had gunslingers in the streets. You had lynchings, a lot worse than what, you know, we see in terms of things now. I mean, we still got those now, but we had open lynchings where you couldn't do things. And a lot of that was the result of the political, economic agendas that were going on in the country at that time. And we did put a halt to that in some ways. I mean, different variations of how that was done. But that was the case, you know. You look at other countries, you got the same kind of thing sometimes. You got that open warfare in communities. The gangsters' days of New York City and the gangster days of L.A. on them and dump them in the Hudson River. You know, so we've always been violent, and we're very violent, you know, and we don't see that level again. So how do we look at that? What do you think, Brother Lush? How do we examine that? Well, you know, we're kind of raising a question over a few incidents that have taken place, but is that valid?
You know, as I reflect on myself and listen to the what you had presented, you know, to tell you the truth, I was one of those good black Catholic children out of the Crescent City of New Orleans there.
Right.
You know, and kind of stood right in around the home front and not to journey off too far. You know, I think of myself today now as trying to be one to be able to be of service. You know, I think that there are things that we can still do to be of assistance, and try to be able to curb this madness that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are fully aware of consequences of certain kinds and types of actions. And so, you know, it's really tough when one steps over that boundary. And it is a point of no return.
Yeah.
When one, right? So I try to look at it in terms of how could I be of service to my brother and sister, to be able to lift them up,
right.
and not, you know, hopefully not cause any hurt, harm, or danger to myself in the process, but to be able to everyone shoulder up and work together,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And many hands make light work, and we know what it is that we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I be of service, to be of assistance, to be of help, and work from that point of view? You know, I admit that I don't own a weapon. I would hope that and what I've always continued to either fight with my head, my heart, and my hands. And should I lose at any one of those fronts, just, you know, I'm going to have to chalk that up to a defeat and move on. Dust myself, pick myself up, and dust myself off and move on.
Right.
Man, it's really tough.
Yeah,
these
it
days,
is. It is.
And I don't want to, you know. Let me also say this too, and I guess I'm really trying to be diplomatic about it, but we have gotten to the point, Dr. Rogers, and everyone who's within the listening audience, that it's one has to save oneself.
Mm-hmm.
One has to save oneself, and so you're going to do those things to survive. And so whether it's toning down talk or voice tones, being able to always, of course, be mindful of your surroundings, one is going to do the kinds and types of things to be able to save one's own self now.
Right. Exactly.
And so in this process of saving them, we know that no man is an island unto himself. So how can we link up and be able to work together? Right through
that's
this process, and so that's the angle that I'm coming from as
that is right.
We
that's the key
we
that's
talk
the key
with
question.
This.
You know, it's so interesting in the spirit of things, and in the ancestral realm that we are around. It's interesting sometimes that we are sometimes faced with situations that we have to respond to. In particular, if we are one, like for instance, I'm always talking about mentoring and what we need to do for our kids and do this and do that, you know, and I mean it, and I want to do that. I've done that most of my life, working with our community, trying to build things and do stuff, and a lot of times you get stuff thrown into your face that is totally different, like my own kids, you know. I mean, I'm out mentoring a group of young boys, and I got grandsons that are acting crazy. And so I've got to turn and work with them and help them. And then, and this is something very recent, I got a call from a very good friend whose son is getting ready to be released from prison today. And she wants me to work with him, help him out, and help to get him back on path. But he committed a crime that was horrendous. He robbed an elderly woman, knocked her down, and took her pocketbook and ran and got caught. He didn't hurt her. He hurt her by knocking her down, but not intentional. And he got caught, and he went, and he was sentenced to 10 years. He gave him 5. He's got to do 5, and then the rest of it is parole. Now, he'll be on parole, and he has a choice to walk straight, or either go back and finish that whole 5 years. And he's young. He's a young guy. He's late 20s. And but he went wrong. Something happened. Now, she asked me to help him. Okay. Now, what do I do? Do I say, well, look, I can't do that because, you know, I'm older now and I don't get around. What do I do? Or do I say, yes, I'm going to help him? And normally, that's what I do. And that's what I did. I said, sure, I will help him. And he's been calling me leading up to the time that he's supposed to be getting out to talk about jobs. So one of the first things I did is reach out to the community. And I reached out to some folks that I know, said, listen, I got this young brother coming out, I need help. Will you to help me with this kid? You know, and I think he'll listen. I think he's poached for listening. And it's just that I've got to be able to present him with something that's going to work for him. And that's the key, and that's hard to do. So like you're saying, Brother Lush, I got to link some folk together for this one kid. I got to link about four or five people because we know what he's capable of doing. I know what he's capable of doing.
Right, right.
And so, I mean, this is a real life situation. This kid is due to be released from the maximum security prison in Wisconsin. That he has been there for 5 years already. And now don't talk about the institutionalization part of all that and coming out what he has to deal with and some of those kinds of things. So this is a real life situation. What do we do?
Dr. Rogers, can I say something?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
We have to include social media.
Okay.
As part of the problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. It's been a monster to that.
And Dr. Rogers?
Yes.
I just wanted to touch on something you had mentioned earlier. You know, you guys talked about the football player in North Carolina.
Right. South Carolina.
And shot two kids and other family members. Well, you know, like you were saying, that was from the football injuries, and the NFL just, you know, paid out like $1 billion, you know, for all these retired players and other players because they had lowered the scale, you know, as far as them getting treatment. And so when you know Aaron Hernandez, when they examined his body, they found he had PTSD. He had CTE trauma to his head, and so this is something that they know, you know, that it promotes violence in people and you know, dementia and a whole bunch of other things. So when you think about the violence and how does that happen, you know, and that's sport, you know, and in boxing and stuff, but you know, that's something that they've known about.
So how do we handle that? We know that's there. How do we handle that? Every Sunday evening, you got over 50% of the men of America sitting in front of a square box watching all that, supporting it.
Right. One of the things that they've been doing is they've changed the scheme of the game to, you know, injuries and late shots and hits. And
but Brother Kwasi, you know that ain't getting it.
To a degree, because a lot of people were leading with their heads for the most part. That's just the way they played the game. So if you lead with your head, whether you hit the player or miss the player, you're getting fined.
Well, you get fined, so but then he goes out on a stretcher. You get fined and he gets pulled out on a stretcher. How did that help?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the numbers are down in regards to how often that happens. You can go a whole game with people not spearing people.
You know, and I hear you. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I'm hearing you, but I'm also thinking of the practicality. You're talking about a $1 billion
right.
industry. They don't care if they pay out a couple of million dollars to do.
They don't get affected.
So I just
wanted to make reference in regards to why these players are doing it. I mean, it's, like I said, it's not a normal behavior from us, you know, and they know that that's part of that trauma.
Right, I agree. I hear you. I understand exactly what you're saying. But let me spring off of what I just, the example I gave you of this young kid. Let me ask my brother here from Newbern, 252-474. Let me ask you, what would you advise me to do? I've got this 20-some-year-old kid that was been in prison for armed robbery, robbing an elderly lady. I think she was in her 70s. Knocked her down, took her pocketbook, hurt her, ran, he got caught, went to prison. He's in prison Now he's getting out. He's going to be out on five for what would you suggest that I do to help him? I can't ensure that he doesn't reciprocate and go back in, but I can at least try to make a strong contribution. What would you suggest that I do?
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Good, doing good. Because I know
good
you work hard you. In your community and the things you're doing, so I just wanted to ask you because I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I just think maybe just some, I mean, I'm really asking sincerely, what would I do?
Well, I understand what you're saying, brother, and I work with these kind of brothers, got some in my family. I got a son that's getting ready to finish up 17 years.
Ooh.
Because most of my kids are in California, and they got caught up in that gang stuff that you're either part of it or you're not, you know? So I understand what you're saying.
Right.
No excuses for it at all. But to answer your question directly, walk with him. Get to know him. And he'll develop a trust in you.
Right.
And there's no guarantees on anything.
No, it's not.
The most closest thing that you can do is develop that trust and him trusting you. And believe it or not, step by step, man, help him get back into society.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And find out his weaknesses and his strength and help show him the way.
That's a good idea.
Help show him the way, brother, that he may not understand how he can get back in. Help show him how he can get back in one step at a time, bruh. You know, if he got to have a GED or show him his strengths and how he can marry back into the system, bruh. If he can sing, if he can get into performing arts and get a degree in that or a trade school or, you know, just what I'm saying, bruh, step by step, man. Just
right.
Hold on to him.
Right.
And help him get back in the system.
Beautiful, beautiful.
All right, bro.
Okay, thank you so much.
I'm listening, man. You guys are doing a good job. I'm just listening.
I appreciate it. Okay, we're gonna take a break. When I come back, I want to ask you, Brother Timothy, to tell me what I should do. You belong to a group that has spent years working with the brothers coming out of the institution, and I want to ask you, what do you think? What do you think might be some help that you could offer for this young brother that's coming out into the system, you, him? So I want to ask you, I'm going to put that out there to you, and then I want to hear a female version. So Sister Benicia, I want to ask you what you think that would be advice to deal with this. He's a young, tenable, nice kid, great personality, sweet as he can be, you know. But we know what he's capable of doing. Now, why he would do that, I don't know. I didn't get into all that. But, you know, I did tell his mother that I would help. And so what we're going to do is take a quick break. And when I come back, we want to open ourselves up for that and see what we can say, what we can find out. So with that, let's take a quick break here. As you know, we are paying most of our tribute today to the music of New Orleans. That's what we're going to start doing from now on all of our programs. Going to give tribute to our musical geniuses and that institution that makes us happy when we listen and kind of think about that from a perspective. So let's close and let's listen to some of these pieces of New Orleans jazz and history that has made us smile. You know, when we have troubles and down and out, we can put on some music and feel much better.
Thank you.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414-988-3079.
Are you or is anyone you know suffering from the horrific effects of trauma? If so, the Little Book of Affirmations, Claim Your Narrative Over Trauma, can help you. This short ebook is a self-help tool to help you get started on the path of healing from the impacts of trauma. It is important to know that trauma is not an event. It is how your body responds to an event. School shootings, police shootings, the death of a loved one, car accident, all of these events can cause trauma in our bodies. But you can heal from it. I repeat, you can heal from it. So go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble to purchase your ebook today and just in time for the holidays, which is a time when a lot of people are suffering. Give the gift of healing for yourself or for someone you care about. The book was written by a licensed professional counselor who specializes in trauma-informed care. Follow her on Instagram at PLT_LPC and LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor. And I repeat, Instagram at PLT_LPC and LinkedIn at Patricia Taylor.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Okay, we're back, sisters and brothers. We are talking and doing a rearview mirror examination of 2021. And some of you have answered and have participated and given us some extremely important words and advice on what we need to do, what we've learned from 2021, and what is it that we need to take from that learning and build on. And so that's what we've been talking about. Also, our program today, as I indicated earlier, is a musical tribute to the music of New Orleans, the jazz of New Orleans. New Orleans has taken some serious hits over the last few years, but it has not stopped that music that comes out of that powerful city. We just listened to a song by one of the jazz legends of New Orleans, Dr. John, who has joined the ancestral world now, singing When the Saints Go Marching In. This is rendition of that. And so I wanted to do that on all of our programs. We're going to feature a music genre that we are going to pay tribute to that have been a powerful inspiration and pillar in the Black community. It has helped us to move forward. And so I'm really, really looking forward to doing more of that. Okay, we were left with a question on the table that we were asking folks to take consider as an answer. I indicated earlier, for those who have just joined us and may not have heard that, is that I have been asked to take on the responsibility of mentoring a young man that has just done 5 years in the maximum security prison here in Wisconsin. He'll be out. He's actually supposed to get out today. And he had committed a crime that not very delightful at all. He had an armed robbery of an elderly woman in their 70s. She didn't get hurt. But at least he took her pocketbook and ran and was arrested. And obviously he had to do 10 years, 5 in, 5 out. And so now he's faced with trying to survive out here in these streets of Wisconsin without having to go back. And I've been asked to help, see if I could guide that. And because I like to not only talk the talk, but I walk the walk too, I have decided to agree to that. And so I put to this panel today to ask you, what advice would you give me to work with this young man who's coming back into the system? He's been out a long time. He hadn't seen any of the stuff that we've gone through, the COVID, the drag car racing down Sherman Boulevard here, the number of murders. He hadn't experienced any of that, no more than hear it. And I'm not too sure of how much he has heard. But he left when maybe things were a lot different, and so now he's back. So I'm asking members of our panel to give us some advice on what I might do. So, Brother Timothy, let's go to you, and then I'm going to go to Sister Benicia and ask her advice. What do you think, Brother Timothy? What advice would you give me?
Well, Brother, I'm going to start like this. I have a lot of friends been in and out of the penitentiary. I have some friends who repeat it. I have some friends that never go back. Mm-hmm. I have some friends that died in the penitentiary. I have some friends that one of my best friends that never come out. Mm-hmm. So, Brother, I'm going to say this to you with some advice that I would start with him about, what do you like, man? Because Sonny Liston was incarcerated and became a professional fighter, the champion of the world. Mm-hmm. Bernard Hopkins trained well in institution and became a champion. Light heavyweight took the title and someone took it from him.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had James Brown, you know, who Bobby Burton him went incarcerated. People don't know him. He came out and started the Fame, the famous Flames, and he became James Brown, you know, and the Flames. Then it became JB. So, brother, this goes to show you that, you know, you could come out of penitentiary and be a fantastic and wonderful, articulate person. Malcolm X, without a doubt,
mm-hmm.
a known incarcerated pimp hustling drug user, but had leadership qualities, and he ran into a man that he fell in love with, man, with a movement. See, so the thing is, Dr. Rogers, I'm going to tell you, you have a lot to offer him, but you have to meet him where he's at. Now, the other thing, Dr. Rogers, does he want to change, and does he want to be a part of society?
Right.
He has to make that decision on you walking with him down his path. That's one thing. You know, tap into his talents. And Dr. Rogers, man, you got so much history. God, man, just start him off with the elementary. Dr. Rogers, your stuff is so heavy, man. I can't wait to call every Tuesday.
Okay.
Start him off with the elementary. And you might know enough to go on to another level, esoteric level. He studied something in there. He did something in penitentiary. Found it as a furniture making. Is it writing? You know, is it music? You know, does he want to get into entertainment? Does he want to be an actor?
Right.
You know, find out where he's at and what he wants to do. You know, he might be a ladies' man. You know, mm-hmm. you know, he might want to do something when it comes to clothing, designing. Dr. Rogers, whatever it is, he has to want to do it, though, Dr. Rogers.
I hear you.
And you want to help him, and that's the battle. Ask him when he was there, did he study the Quran? Did he study the Bible? You study any history? Dr. Rogers, you know, one time he used to have debating teams in institutions. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I know some people, they say, came out with degrees, undergraduate, graduate, to the best of my knowledge. I heard about it. I never met a person. But you become degreed. Now, I want to know where he left off at, who were his friends, and what does he want to do?
Right.
that's me, Dr. Rogers.
Well, that's good
but
advice.
I got to say something to you, Dr.
That's good
Rogers.
Advice.
That, huh?
I said, that's good advice. Very good advice.
Very good fights. I'm going to say this to you also, Dr. Rogers. I like all your introductions. I like what you're doing in New Orleans. I like the way you're exposing these guys who wrote for people like the Rolling Stones and how these people would have been bigger than the Rolling Stones if they went the right color and had the right connection.
That's right.
Just like Hollywood wrote for the Stones. You know, and Mudd. It's just like they couldn't wait. Led Zeppelin didn't write for the Stones. They stole from Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm telling you that I like the way you're bringing that out. Just imagine if they would have got the opportunity that those guys who were white got.
That's right.
Yeah. But I like what you do. I like this what you're doing with this young man, Dr. Rogers.
Well, good.
You know what? You're a professional at this. If all you got to do is grab onto you and want to do it, and you'll just lead him on, Doc. Right. And maybe let him come down, invite him one time on the radio. Let's all talk.
Yeah, I may do that.
And see how it happens. He might be influenced by all of us.
Yeah. I may very well do that.
We might learn from him. How about we learn from him?
That's true.
Goes around.
Very good idea. Very good suggestion. Very good. Thank you so much. Yes, I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure.
Sister Benisa, what you think?
Okay. I got your message a short while ago, about an hour
right,
and a half.
Right,
maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm being obedient.
I got you.
Yes, greetings, everybody.
Good to
you. Good to hear from everybody. Listen to everyone. So, in response to your question, I don't give advice. I see no more point in it. But I like to look at reality. And as you know, the cause, the effect, and the solution of things. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to complicate anything, but when you talked about this young man, first of all, I know you know what to do because you've been doing this for so long, mm-hmm. you know. But it's still good to hear from, you know, other people and what they do and et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, I lost my train of thought. So anyway, what I was going to say is this young man, okay, cause, effect, and solution. The first thing I want to know is what was the cause of that behavior? Was it extreme poverty?
No, he didn't have extreme poverty. No, he was one-parent home, was raised by a single mom all his life. That's one number one that stands out for me.
Yeah, and if you don't mind if I interject, these are questions that I'm not really asking for answers for, but I'm throwing out the issues that our people and our young men and our young women have. Was it extreme poverty? Was it anger? Was it neglect? What caused this young person to do what they did? It could be a number of things. And so the first thing I would do, and what I know that we need to do, and this is a we, not you know, a me thing, find out what's going on with this young man. You know? And I say that because I've shared before that, you know, as a woman, when I first got into counseling, working with recovering people, addicts and alcoholics, et cetera, dysfunctional families, I never knew that I was going to do that, number one. That wasn't in my plan. Number two, I never knew that I would be working primarily with males. And every time I turned around, I was working with groups of males. And so I want to give the perspective of a woman who's worked with young males for a lot of her life. And the first thing I saw was that, and heard, was that, and I'm going to repeat what they said, nobody gives a shit about me. Nobody cares about me. I did not know that so many young black men felt that way. And so when you feel that way, you're going to act out. If you don't have access to something, you're going to take it. So I had to, you know, start to understand what was going on inside these young brothers. And then I would offer, you know, different options of how to create a life. And, of course, I do it via whatever agency I was working for, whatever. But we still have the Nation of Islam. We still have black organizations that do that work with our young men. And that's where I would go, because you spend so much time, you know, working with our people, that I think maybe you might need a little break, but not do as much. But it's not the job of one person. That's what I want to say, because I don't want to jump all over the place. It's not the job of one person. We've given up our culture of Ubuntu, which is, you know, I am because you are, and we do things together. We've given that up for individualism.
Right.
Individualism will not work. It does not work.
That's exactly right.
So that young man needs to be helped by a group of men. That's what I want to say.
Group.
Not just Dr. Rogers, but a group of men. And maybe and some women.
Right.
So, you know, he can get to know what community looks like. And community is not just a group of men. And get his needs met from the community. You know that saying, it takes a village to raise a child?
Right.
Well, everyone is a child of the village.
Right.
And that's the piece that Hillary Clinton, with her stealing ass, didn't bring back. You know? We're all products of the village.
Yeah.
So we know how to take care of our people. My brother Timothy was saying, the people that, you know, he knows that were in prison, and others, you know, that, I mean, look at all the millions of brothers that are incarcerated.
Right.
You know, this is a common problem. And by the way, as a female, I did what that young brother did when I was younger. I stole pocketbooks and fought and, you know, I did all kinds of crazy things. And I could be in jail. I just didn't get caught.
Didn't get caught.
Yeah, I just didn't get caught. And I would say that for a whole lot of us.
Yeah.
You know, drugs and whatnot. So I wouldn't have him stand out like a sore thumb, like, oh, he just came out of prison. A lot of us did stuff. We just didn't get busted.
I see. You know, and so, I think you said something very critical, too. You talked about, you said the fact that, you know, we've got to not take that selfish role when we are faced with the opportunity of working with our young people and make the sacrifice that's necessary. Because I've run into that. I've run into organizations of men that I was working with, and the job was to mentor these young children. And they would say, well, you know, I can't right now. I'm working a double shift. And I got to sleep, blah, 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 blah. You know, and you get that a lot, you know. And I usually don't say anything. I just listen. I say, well, if you ever get some time, you know, come and let me know if you can work with some of our kids because they need you. Okay, okay, I'll make sure I do. And obviously, you know, you never hear from them. So I think that's one of the important things that we can do as a community. And I'm not knocking our brothers because sometimes they may have some problems that they can't do it. They have their own families they have to deal with. You know. So then, when we get these situations that Brother Herbie White said, and next thing you know, you got teddy bears and flowers all around telephone poles. It's too late. It's too late. And Brother White, I know. You know, I mean, that's a horrendous situation. I can imagine those parents are crying, hollering, "What happened? How did this could happen? How could somebody do this?" Easy when you don't, especially when they don't have help. So when our community is not organized, not together.
Right. Yes.
It's easy to do that.
Yes. Or community organization. And, you know, there are young brothers. Now, one thing I'm seeing an increase in where I am are young men who have come out of prison, and they're creating 501c3s, and they're creating organizations, they're churches,
yes,
like I said, mosques and whatnot, creating and developing organizations and ministries to help with this type of thing.
Right, exactly.
Because it's, you know, it's a lot for one person.
Exactly, exactly.
It's a lot, and it's not meant to be one person. That's, I want to stress that, like you said. If we would just really learn our culture and practice our culture, you know, and do as we've always done. We've always taken care of each other until we got distracted by sports and entertainment and becoming a millionaire and all these other things. That's why we're too damn busy, honestly.
Yeah, I know.
You know, because we're distracted. So there are organizations that I certainly have consulted.
Right.
When I've had to deal with brothers, you know, and not just a few years ago, you know, coming out of prison and whatnot, and there are organizations that help them, give them clothing and help find jobs. They're out there.
Sometimes you just need the direction to go where they are and to encourage them to go where they are.
Yeah, and go with them. There are people that are going with them. I think there's more out here then we realize. We just have to find it. Because I don't want to take up too much time, but when I was in a position where I chose to help similar to a family member, I'll call him a brother, help a brother, I didn't know what was out there until I started searching.
Right.
And then I found OIC under a different name.
Yeah.
And I found a brother who had come out of prison that had a nice office that was teaching the brothers, you know, coming out, self-esteem, how to find jobs, how to fill out, you know,
applications,
your resumes.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
They're out there.
Yeah, that's right.
But now we're in, you know, positions where, you know, sometimes we get positions where we have to find these things, and, you know, Spirit will lead us.
And, you know, you're right, there are programs like that. But, see, you got to also understand that a lot of these young folk not going to programs like that. They're not going to do that. They're not going to go that way. You can't even make them go. You got to kind of nurture them, as my brother said from Newbern. You know, you just got to talk to them, see where they are, and make some encouragement, because I know they're not going to just jump right out there and go, you know, like that. And let me say this much, too. When I say community, I'm not talking geography. I'm talking culture and spiritual. We are part of a spiritual cultural community that may be spread out to different areas. I'm not talking geography on that. So, you know, we can't just say, well, ain't no black folk in the community. Yeah, but I'm not talking about that community. You know, it's another community that we have to kind of consider as well, that we have to work with. So Thank you so much.
Can I say one more quick thing?
Yes.
To your point about talking to our brothers, there are many ways. If we just would not get caught up in doing things one way, that's, I guess I want to say that.
Right.
Yeah, because the two brothers that I've worked with recently, I talked and other men talked to them until we were green in the face,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they still acted out. And it was only until we got them in places where other brothers, you know, it didn't have to be a lot, 2, 3, said, okay, we're taking you, you know, under our wing, and this is what you're going to do.
Right.
And this is your structure, and this is, you know, we got something set up for you, you know. It was at that point, you know, when they found jobs, these brothers found jobs for them, et cetera, that, you know, that they started moving forward.
Right.
That's why I said I don't. Just the individualism, maybe to start with, but I don't think, you know, one person can do it all.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And I'll keep that in mind, definitely as well, too. Let me go over here to Brother West. Brother West, is that you from Atlanta?
Yes, sir. Good. Dr. Rogers. How you doing, my brother?
Doing real good, my friend. How you been?
Hey, I'm still learning, man. To that young brother there?
Yeah.
Well, she got to learn the law of physics. For every action, there's equal and opposite reaction.
Okay.
So, if I would talk to him, I'd try to say, look here, brother, you got to pay some kind of restitution to that lady he robbed. So, that lady's still living, have him to go find that lady, at least cut a yard or wash a car or do something for that
mm-hmm.
lady, man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And ask her for forgiveness, man.
Okay.
That's how it works, man. You find that lady, say, I could cut your yard in the summer, or if they're all up there in the wintertime, I shovel the snow out your driveway or something, man.
That's a good point, because that's an African principle. Reciprocity is a key principle to Ma'at, the Ma'at principle.
That's right.
Yeah, so you're right.
And see, y'all say my heart. I say my heart. That's what I say, my heart to the heart.
Okay.
That's the way I look at it, man. To my brother that says he ain't got no weapon, we all got a weapon. We usually not. And that's the tongue. Our tongue is the magic wand, man.
Right.
Once we learn that, how words, you ask me what I learned for 2021, I learned that our words is our magic wand. We can create heaven or hell with the power of your tongue.
Right.
And what I really want to talk to you about, you know, we got a chance to get the black governor in Georgia. I don't know if you're still in Georgia, right? A black governor in Georgia.
Oh, the sister. Yeah, she's going to run for governor. Yes, yes. I've been hearing about
that. Yes, sir. I can guarantee we're going to have a black governor. You know how, Doc, just how to do it. I'm a thinker now, right?
Okay.
You got Stacey Abrams on the Democratic side running unopposed, correct?
Right.
Okay, and the Republican side, you got my brother Bernard Jones. All right?
Okay.
So, and Kemp and Perdugo canceled themselves out, right? So, all we need is 50% of black Georgians, 50% vote for Bernard Jones.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And that's because you know in Georgia, once you vote in the primary, whatever party, you got to stick to it through the whole, to the general.
Right, exactly.
So, my objective is to get Vernon Jones and Stacey Abrams in the general election, man.
Right.
Okay, that'll be black on black.
Right.
And we can guarantee we're going to have a black governor, man.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
I'm a thinker.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you this, and this is not a question of irony. I'm really looking for an answer. How do you think having a black governor will help the state of Georgia as it relates to African-American people?
Well, one reason, it'll show these redneck peckerwoods that their time is up. Okay, they'll fall out. If they ain't got no choices, a black governor on one side, a Democrat, mm-hmm. Republican, hey, bro, I'm about sticking it to the man now. That's our chance now.
Okay.
Okay, it's time. That's restitution. They got to pay us back. So I think even though, you know, we got kind of jammed up with having a black president,
mm-hmm.
Obama.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I would just want to see these redneck peckerwood back at you and folks go crazy, man, in Georgia. See what see a black government, man, they'll go crazy, Bob. That's what I want to see, man. Okay? That's what I want to see, man. So if we could get Bernie Jones and Stacey Abrams running against each other in the general election, man, I hope all, every cracker get out of Georgia, to tell you the truth.
But you know that, but to have, you know, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but to have a bunch of crazy white people mad because we got a black governor, how is that still going to help us? Because we had a bunch of white folks that was crazy because of Obama, and they ended up bringing in a fool after he left.
Well, so that'll make us stronger, man. Because we got to know how to protect our damn self, man.
And you know, Georgia is a strong political, has strong black political politics. Because,
Doc, it's something called collective conscience, man. See, we don't know the power we got, man. Just our thought and our tongue. We got collective conscience. And I learned in America now, we're in the day of judgment now. Look how many white folks is going to be, at least going to trial and going to jail for doing stuff to us, man.
Right.
Look at that devil that killed Chauvin. Look at even in South Georgia, where they tried to rig the jury. 11-1. Doc, we use collective consciousness. Every black person in the world say them folks are gonna be convicted. If we put our minds together and our thoughts together, that's called collective consciousness, man. We did it, but we don't know we did it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna argue against that. I agree with you. That collective mental power. I agree.
And we turn that whole white jury to convict their own people, man. See, we got more power than what we think, man.
Okay. All right.
And once we learn how to use our power, bro, we got it. We only use 10% of our power anyway, man.
Right, right.
But that's what I'm learning to use my power, man. I say, "Coon follow coon, be and it is, man."
Right.
But anyway, I'm gonna be quiet, man.
Well, Brother Wes, I don't knock that. That's why we call this the Black Reality Think Tank. This is a place for us to think about stuff. So I'm with you.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
But just make sure that young man, you know, pay restitution, do something for that lady. Because, see, Doc, I'm going to tell you what people are your fans. My mama, her pocketbook got snapped down there in Florida. Somebody knocked her down. She was going to church, man. And some thug knocked her down and snatched her pocketbook when she going to church.
Hmm.
But I went looking for that. I went looking for that devil because I was going to lay hands on him. He better try Jesus. Yeah. Don't try me.
And, I mean, we hear anyway, horror stories like that. I think it was yesterday I heard an elderly woman, 67, 60, 70 years old, got raped in Detroit. In Detroit, somebody grabbed her, raped her, and then killed her.
Wow.
Two brothers.
Well, whoever did that, they're going to pay, man, because we're in the day of judgment now.
That's
whatever somebody do is coming back on the fan. Now.
That's right.
The universe not playing. So they're going to get found out, and they got to pay, man. Reciprocity. I let somebody talk.
Okay.
Peace and blessings. I love your show, man. I love it.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Brother West. Let me go over here to Washington, D.C. I haven't had a chance to speak with the folk there. Well, either Maryland or Washington. 240, would you like to say anything, or are you just listening?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. This is Wahida from Maryland.
Oh yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Great.
I'm enjoying your show this evening.
Thank you.
I guess I have to say something because you know, my son is incarcerated.
That's right.
And what I want to say, this my sister who came on earlier, said everything that I wanted to say. We really have a kindred mind. I'm not going to repeat what she said before.
Okay.
But I just want to emphasize, since we cannot duplicate you, Dr. Rogers,
right.
Since we can't duplicate you, can't clone you, then we have to have more of you out there somewhere. I just want to say it's the family. Everything starts with the family. That's where the I am because we are. That starts with the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about my own son and his growing up. And even though I'm not his biological mother, when he grew up, the men in the family just weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody there for him. I went to organizations and got him mentors. And, you know, sometimes that didn't work. Mentor lasts maybe 2-3 weeks, and then you get somebody else, they might last a month, and then you get somebody good, and then they move away. But our family's always there.
Mm-hmm.
So why aren't the uncles and the brothers and the grandfathers, why aren't they stepping up? He had all those people. He even had a biological father who saw him, probably came to my house 4 times in 20 years. And I'm giving him credit for graduation. You know, when he graduated from high school. And you know, and since he's been incarcerated, I've gotten him to do a little bit more. But how you see your son 4 times in 20 years?
Yeah,
and think he's going to come out right?
Right.
Okay, and then you had, you know, you come from a family that has all of these uncles and cousins and people who are on the police department and people who are lawyers, and nobody comes around. Nobody comes to support you,
mm-hmm.
okay? You know, so that, you know, going out to get a group or finding an organization, the organization, the first organization is the family.
Right, first.
And I got a cousin right now, and somebody asked me within the last week, he's getting ready to be homeless. And this cousin, who was a lawyer, was doing something for me, and she said, well, you can do something for me. Can you find him a shelter? Can you find him some help? Can you do this? Can you do that? And I'm saying, yeah. Mm-hmm. But then I think, well, what about all his uncles? These are men.
That's right. Where are they?
Okay. You know, his aunts. He didn't come from nowhere. Okay. Why aren't these people stepping up? You know, I mean, I'm going to step up and I'm going to do what I know how to do.
Right.
You know, I was a teacher for 40 years. So I'm used to working with young people all the time. And so it's no problem for me to do that. But where's the aunts and the uncles and the grandfathers and those people? And what I'm saying is, for every person that's listening to my voice now, go out and get somebody in your family to help those people in your family. Find out who's having a problem. And then as a family group, help that person. Don't look for strangers to come in and solve a family problem.
Amen.
Solve that yourself. You know, don't everybody sit around the table and talk about, well, you know, so-and-so, they need help. You know, she did this to her daughter, and she did that, and that's child abuse. Instead of talking to me, talk to her.
That's right. That's right. There you go.
Who's having the problem.
Now, that's what I'm talking about. That's what's missing.
Let us step up. Let us stop, you know, gossiping about it, and let's go help that person. That's our blood. That's our blood. That's our family. Okay?
And see, that's what's missing.
And if we know that they got a problem, either we help them with it, or we help to get some help for them. But we can't do it all. You know, we don't know it all. Everybody's not a psychologist or a teacher or this or that.
Right.
But we can at least go out and try and help somebody. Don't look for the system to take care of you. And talk about poverty. We ain't got no excuse. We went through 400 years of slavery.
That's
we
right.
know what poverty is. And we didn't do that stuff then. We wasn't acting crazy then.
Right.
We didn't have mothers then. We were sold off. Anybody who came around who wanted to help us, helped us. They, you know, we were raised by wherever we were.
That's right.
Okay, so we can't have, there's just no excuse that we can come up with. We never too busy. How many shifts you work? Slavery you work from sun, can't see in the morning, can't see at night, and you still took care of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't come up with any excuses. We just got to be tough people. We are genius people. We put on this earth to do good.
That's right.
We got a history. We got a history that says how strong we are. So we just have no excuse. We just got to do it. That's all.
That's right. And that's the African way, the extended family. It's really been the survival mechanism for us being where we are.
Right. Right.
It's that extended family, not always mm-hmm. that immediate family.
Right. My son is not my blood.
Right.
And his uncle in London cried on the phone the last time I talked to him because he said, here you are, a stranger, not even in the family, and you raised this child.
Yep, that's the way it is.
Okay, and you know, I mean, that's just what we do.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what, you see somebody, they need help, you help them out.
Right.
And yeah, it's a struggle, and it can be hard, but it also can be rewarding.
That's right.
And I, you know, and I wouldn't have changed a thing. I wouldn't have, you know, what am I supposed to do, put the baby out? have my mama turning over in her grave. You ain't gonna put no child out. You're gonna take care of that child.
Right.
And as you know, one of my Muslim friends told me, you know, God will take care of you. Don't worry about it. You know, you don't have to take no government money. You doing this from the heart, and you just do what you have to do, and you go on. Because you're going to have good results.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's sometimes it doesn't come out the way you want it to do, but you don't give up.
That's right.
It ain't over.
That's
as
right.
long as there's breath, it's not over. Okay.
Okay. Well, I definitely appreciate that. That is a very powerful expose that you've just given about that. You know, because you just brought back a lot of memories for me as well. I think about the community that I was raised in, and I think about most of my friends and young people, including myself in the community, were not raised by the immediate parents.
Mm-hmm.
Not the immediate. And we didn't go to no adoption agency and fill out paperwork and do all that, and the worker come out to the house and see if you had food and all that. They don't do that. That's not how it was done.
Right.
You just took
somebody in. My mother did it all the time. My grandmother did it all the time.
That's right. That's right.
And you see somebody in need, and you do what you got to do.
Right. When I was born, my mother was 17. Now, mm-hmm. you know who's going to have to raise me.
Right.
Not her. See, I was 17 years old in high school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And we're going to think about it. You're right. That's a task. I mean, it was a good point for us to use it as this discussion, because we're asking the question, where are we in 2021? What did we learn? Well, one of the things that we're clearly saying here today that we learned in 2021 is that the black family is still broken, and it needs to be fixed, and we need to fix it.
Yeah.
And we can fix it. You know, and that's why I started off with that song by Alvin Toussaint called Yes, We Can. Yeah, we can. We can do it. Don't say we can't do it. We can do it. Therefore, a lot of times you may not be able to personally do it, but you can walk up to somebody and say, look, here's a box of grocery, man. You know, I know you got that extra kid in there. Take this, you know, and feed your family with it. There are things like that, you know, some clothes, things. There's all kind of things you can do. You can do that. Brother LaRue, you want to add anything to this conversation, my good brother? Brother LaRue? Your phone might be muted because I told
you. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yeah, I hollered at you and told you to mute your phone. I'm sorry. You're right. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, man. I appreciate it that you let me in.
Yeah. Any thoughts?
One thing we have to, and I know we ain't got much time, but we act according to what we think we are. You cannot get around that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that programming of what we think we are, and that begins when we're like, when we come out the womb.
Right.
And so we have to consider the culture that we're raised in and how that culture views us. And then it happens generation after generation. It gets handed down from one set of people who raise us to another.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But we can't get around the fact that we act according to what we think we are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so, in this culture that we're raised in, one of the things that we suffer from are unmet needs. We got physical needs, and we got psychological and spiritual needs. And the culture that we're raised in was not designed to feed our mental and spiritual needs. Dr. Martin Luther King called it the DMI, with the drum major instinct.
Makes a lot of sense.
And so, when, just like if you don't have water, you start to, if you're in the desert, you don't have any water, you start to hallucinate. You start to see water with water. There ain't no water. Even when we don't have the right vitamins, we don't have the right nutrition, it causes problems, not only physically, but mentally as well.
Right.
And so that's what I'm looking at, that when we analyze the problem correctly, that's when we can begin to come up with the proper solutions.
Exactly.
Now, what we're looking at is if we got 10 people in the room and two people get sick, then we might look at those individuals and say, well, something's wrong, something on them. But if 8 people in the room get sick, then we start to look for a common cause. And so if we're going to understand the individual, what's happening with the individuals, we have to understand what's happening with the group as well. Because the individuals make up the group.
That makes sense.
So we have to look at that we have to look for that common cause, and then work from that point of view on it, from an individual perspective.
Okay. I like that logic. Mm-hmm. That's right. Exactly the way to look at it. And then that way, if you're planning solutions, you know how to begin to direct those solutions. You're right.
Correct. And for the time in, they got this thing, is the Dow test. And you've heard of the Dow test.
Yeah.
Okay, now these kids coming in, what, they 5 years old. And they ask them, what Dow do you like? What Dow do you think is the good Dow? Yeah, what Dow would you, and this and that and the other. And so these beliefs, man, are set in our children at a very early age.
Yes.
And so if you try to reach them by the time they get 17, 18 years old, they've been well programmed. You got to overcome a whole lot of programming you got to correct. There's a lot to correct.
Right.
You just can't do it in one day, 1 hour. So this is what we're looking at.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate that. We got a few minutes left. I want to ask Sister Ann, that she might have left. Okay. I was going to ask her, did she want to say a few things? Sister Dee Dee, you got about a minute. Anything you want to say? No? Okay. All right. Well, brothers and sisters, I really appreciate your comments and your suggestions.
Hi, Dr. Rogers?
Yes.
Hi.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Dr. Rogers. All right. I just wanted to comment on the situation with you and your friend, nephew or son or whatever.
No, this is just a friend in the community that I know the parent.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But what I was saying, you didn't know him before then, right?
No.
Dr. Rogers, you are educated, so you know what I'm getting ready to say.
Okay.
The institutions are just like colleges.
Mm-hmm.
For those. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So if your friend's son, nephew, or whoever he is, goes into college goes into prison and gets influenced by one of these folks out here that will show him how to make $1 million instead of $1.5 million.
Right.
Then, that's going to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
See, so I thought you might have known him coming up.
Right. No, I didn't. I knew him when he was younger. I knew him when he was younger, but not in that way.
Oh, okay. Because I said you got a challenge in front of you.
Yeah, I do, and I know I consider that I did, and I really
do. You have a challenge in front of you,
and I appreciate that. But look, it's right at 9 o'clock, and I thank you for that. That's a good reminder, and I have been thinking along those lines. This is 9 o'clock, and we really appreciate all of you for coming in and chiming in. I appreciate your help. And we will continue this at some other time, because this has been a wonderful discussion.
And it needs
to happen again in another level, and I think we just might just do that. So anyway, have a wonderful week, folks, and I'm going to close out with a little of that New Orleans jazz, and we'll see you next week. Take care.
Okay.